Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Tom Anderson. Tom has served as president of RETA for the last 4 years. Tom has more than 44 years' experience in banking and was the founder and former president and CEO of Pensco Trust Company. He is currently on the board of Pensco Holding LLC. He was also the founder and president of Pensco Pension Services, an IRS-approved non-bank custodian and broker-dealer, and founder and president of Financial Information Services, FIS, a bank consulting company. Tom, we really welcome you to our show.
Well, thanks a lot, Bruce. We've known each other for a number of years, and it's always a pleasure to work with you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Alternative investments, that's basically what we have a chance to use, these self-directed funds. And so we have $7 trillion of monies in these types of accounts. What percentage of that actually gets to the alternate investment world?
Well, there's no hard number for that right now. However, within the RETA organization, we're at approximately $100 billion in assets. I don't have this year's numbers collected from all the members. We're in the process of doing that, but I would estimate it's in the neighborhood of $100 billion. And then there's a whole slew of traditional trust companies, people like organizations like Northern Trust, who have their own degree of self-directed retirement accounts. And there's no numbers that I'm aware of that gather that data.
When people self-direct, they can also self-direct to stocks and mutual funds and other things that they're comfortable with. It doesn't have to be alternative, right?
No, exactly. The whole idea is that the custodian doesn't narrow the choices either because of the nature of their business, like a broker-dealer would restrict to traded assets for the most part, nor, you know, like an insurance company, annuities, et cetera. It's basically anything that's permitted by law, and it's the choice of the individual IRA owner and or an investment advisor that they may choose to work with. But the custodian or trustee play no role at all in the selection of the investments.
Okay. What does the custodian do then if they're not advising?
Sure.
What do they, well, go ahead. Tell me what they do.
Well, they will do the same things that broker dealers that hold IRAs do, the same thing that traditional banks do. And the only difference is the direction of who makes the investment decision or who provides advice in regards to that. So they do the administration, all the record keeping, all the reporting, both for the government and the employee or the IRA owner. They do the storage of, the documents relate to the investment. In many cases, they physically hold the investments or they track where they're held. They provide customer support in terms of education, answering questions, providing distributions, providing dealing with contributions, doing all the government reporting for the individual and for as the government requires just from the custodian. So it's all the record keeping and administration generally. That's what they do.
Are they involved in now appraising or obtaining appraisals?
No. Custodians and trustees generally of IRAs do not actually perform the appraisals. What they do is they gather them either from the asset sponsor, the person or organization that is creating the investment. So if it's a hedge fund or whatever, the hedge fund will provide reports. If it's a piece of real estate, let's say it's a piece of, or it's 2 acres of land, they either get indirectly through an agent of the client, like a real estate appraiser or a real estate broker, an appraisal, or they'll get it from a traditional electronics source like, Zillow or Trulia or whatever.
Okay.
Now, there's an exception generally, and that is when there is a distribution event that an alternative asset or involving an alternative asset, like when you're doing minimum distribution requirements for somebody over 70 and a half.
Okay.
Then there's a higher standard generally for getting a qualified appraiser to value the alternative asset if it's involved in the distribution. If you have an alternative asset in your account and you reach 70 and a half and you're just taking cash out, then it's required, but there can be exceptions as to the degree of requirement. You're basically wanting to get as close as possible to an accurate estimate for value, because the minimum distribution requirement amount is determined by the prior year-end fair market value of the entire account, including any alternative assets. So you want to get a very close valuation. But for example, let's say you've got a stock in a two-year-old company that still hasn't produced a profit, and you're taking a minimum distribution. You may not need to require the client to go out and get a $40,000 valuation on a private equity stock, but you might find that 4 months earlier somebody bought that stock at an XYZ price, and you could use that as a valuation.
Okay. You mentioned something about storing an alternative investment. What would that have been?
Well, for example, if your client wants you to buy, 2 acres in Idaho of real estate,
okay,
then you would hold a deed to that, because the IRA is the owner.
Okay.
The only exception would be if there are multiple owners of the same property, then the custodian would want to know who is holding it, because they might be the minority holder on behalf of their client, and they'll want to know the location of where the information is held. They also want to see a recorded copy of the deed.
I would imagine the custodian is often asked, is this what I'm about to do? Is this a good thing? How do they handle that?
Oh, they're asked that all the time. Unfortunately, it's a matter of what you're saying. Good. A custodian will not opine generally on the merit of an investment, whether or not it's a good investment from a return standpoint, or whether it's a safe investment, because generally speaking, alternative assets, with possible exception of real estate, can be higher risk, particularly private equity. It's a high risk, high return kind of investment. You certainly wouldn't want to have all your eggs in the private equity space that they're your retirement assets. But from a diversification standpoint, having something that doesn't correlate to the stock market generally can be really helpful, especially if it pays off big time, which equity can at times.
Okay.
On the other hand, it's a very high risk investment. So, when they say good, the only thing that where a custodian might actually provide input on a question like that is whether or not there is any apparent prohibited transaction involved in what the client wants to do. Generally speaking, the owner of the IRA is restricted from doing much more than making the investment decision on behalf of the IRA, putting money in and taking money out. But they can't self-deal with themselves. For example, they can't get themselves a loan. They can't have any direct relative benefit from a transaction occurring with their IRA. So, for example, they could buy a rental house near their son's college that he would occupy and, maybe pay or not pay any rent for. They can't buy their grandfather's farm with their IRA, that kind of thing. So there are a number of things that involve prohibited transaction rules that would take another 3 or 4 shows. But custodians can see from the discussion with a client as to what their intent is with their investment, whether or not there's any obvious prohibited transactions right at the get-go. And if there are, they generally will share that with the client.
Do you have problems with fraud being perpetrated?
Sure, absolutely. We like everybody else, every other investment avenue, were affected more by fraud during the downturn in 2008 and 2009, when people get sort of desperate and do desperate things, including stealing money from other people, either, from a bank or from an investment. And so we, like everybody else, reacted to those rising circumstances. And over the last 4 or 5 years, we've really gone the other way on dealing with fraud, which is that we're very proactive about it. As I said, we provided information even to the FBI that they incorporated into their own training program. We have taught some of the regulators about what we do. And so we try to educate the public directly on what they should avoid. And I'm actually writing some material now on every type of investment and how to avoid fraud. But there's a lot you can do if you are knowledgeable about the red flags. And we like to, you know, hope that there's never going to be another fraud. But as soon as one is, you know, figured out, then there's another one that is created. And so it's never going to go away. But you can stay ahead of the curve for sure if you train your employees to look for the signs, train the customers to look for the signs, and give them information about key ways they can avoid being defrauded. You know, having the right documentation on your transaction, having the right information even going into the transaction, doing their due diligence on the background of the individuals promoting the investment. It's amazing how much you can find before you even make the investment that will stop you in your tracks. So, you know, never take anything for granted or any person for granted when you're dealing with your retirement assets.
Sometimes people chase yield, you know, and a tremendous yield is possible. Caution gets thrown to the wind. And
well, absolutely. They hear the good news and they don't hear the risk associated with it. And, you know, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And you're absolutely right. Most of the frauds are associated with investment opportunities that provide on the surface greater gains than the market would bear or the market is demonstrating. So if you're in a 5% market and somebody offers you 8%, your first inclination is to say, wow, that's great, great yield. I think I'll take that. But the fact is they may have no wherewithal whatsoever in developing that yield and or any track record or any explanation of how it's going to be achieved. I've managed as a CEO of Pensco for something like 20 years, and I saw thousands of investments, and many of them never saw the light of day because some of the signs were so obvious that we wouldn't entertain them, or the client figured them out, or we passed on some concerns, or whatever. It's not the duty of the custodian to perform due diligence, and we explain to clients that we don't charge for that, we're not paid for that, we don't have the expertise to do it. However, since we have a lot of experience doing things, if we see something that we're concerned about, we might bring that to your attention, but we're not responsible to do that. And so we instruct them, educate them on, you know, how they can do that for themselves, or they can, you know, hire their own expert advisor or tax person or attorney to do that.
You know, not too long ago, I never heard the word crowdfunding. And now it's pretty prevalent.
So. Yeah, you know, the irony is the government now wants, the regular Joe and not the accredited investor to be able to participate in the capital markets process, and which, quite frankly, I'm entirely, in favor of, and the self-directed IRA industry is supported from the get-go. I mean, we don't care whether the individual has, $2,000 or $10 million, we give them the opportunity to invest if they can find somebody that will take them in as a non-accredited investor. I mean, that's entirely there, up to them. But the government, you know, as much as they've done to try to crack down on the ones that are most successful, like Mitt Romney, they're now, who made his money in the alternative asset space, as many others do, are now allowing the regular person to do that as well. And I think it's a big positive. Of course, they put some constraints on it, which I think are also makes sense, which are limiting the degree to which people that aren't wealthy can invest in private equity by putting income limits on and dollar limits that are associated in alternative investments. So it's a first step. I mean, everybody's very tentative from the regulatory standpoint as to whether or not this is going to be, riddled with fraud or it's going to be successful one way or the other. The jury is out because the SEC just came back in late fall last year with the final regulations allowing it to go forward. So it's going to be interesting to see how it works out, and I'm hoping for the best. And I think the regulations that are in place now will prevent the vast majority of fraud that, from occurring.
The group that we're associated with are mostly real estate investors. So let's talk for a minute about how my self-directed monies can get involved in real estate and in ways that are allowed. And then when I cross the line, tell me what people do that cross that line. So let me just ask a couple questions. Can I buy a house with the intent to fix it and resell it, a flip? Can I do that inside of a self-directed investment?
Yes, absolutely. However, if you do it very frequently so that you're really running a rehab business, you're going to be subject to unrelated business income tax, which is, I won't go into in detail, but it's a tax that's comparable to a normal business tax to a business that's, in business. And so if they consider you running a trade, trader business, by virtue of very high activity doing something like that, then you might have the tax. But it's not illegal. It's just that you get to pay a portion of the returns. But if you just do that occasionally, and provided you don't put the sweat equity in yourself,
correct,
and you hire third parties and they're not your son or your daughter or whatever, it's perfectly legal. We've been doing it for years and years and years. And there are books written about how to do that. We write articles in all kinds of magazines, whether it's Forbes or Fortune or whatever, Wall Street Journal. Our members have been written up in all the major journals, and I'm sure the IRS reads as well. So nobody's really cracked down on that. There's no reason to, because as long as you don't violate the prohibited transaction rules, you certainly can do that.
How many is too many?
There's no perfect answer on that. You have to. I've asked that question. It's been asked numerous times in public forums where there's CPAs present, and they say it's a facts and circumstance thing. And there's nothing coming out of the government that stipulates what it is. I would just say that, practically speaking, I have never heard of enforced. But at the same time, I wouldn't encourage somebody to do it without getting good legal counsel or tax counsel, and being aware of the potential problems if you do it, if you are deemed to be running a business.
If you bought, let's say, rental properties inside of this type of retirement account and then kept them for a couple of years and then sold them all, and a lot of the gain came from the upside in price, is that considered pretty benign then? It's not a flip.
Absolutely, yeah. No question about it. It's no different than buying a mutual fund or a stock and getting dividends along the way and then selling it when the capital gains are there.
Okay. The questions that I just asked, are those answers consistent whether it's an IRA or a Roth or a 401k?
Yes, except in the 401k, unless it's a solo 401k, which is limited to a man and wife in a business or a single person in a business, they're generally not going to allow you to buy any real estate. Certainly not going to buy a rental property in, General Motors 401k. It's not going to happen. The trustees won't open up the opportunities like that. So, but other than that, certainly you can do it in any kind of IRA, SEP IRA, simple IRA. Solo 401k. Now, one advantage of using leverage, which we didn't discuss, but where you can take
that was the next question.
Okay. So you can take a traditional loan like you would if you're buying a house with a mortgage on it. So you put down 30% or whatever, and the balance is financed by either an individual or a bank, and there are a number of banks that lend to IRAs. So you can use leverage to get the leverage, benefit of leverage, which is the increased gains. Now, if you do that inside of an IRA, you're going to be taxed with this onerous thing I call unrelated business income tax. And I can't, you know, in a short time here, I can't get into the details. But there is a book called IRA Lending by Matt Allen, which you can find on the Internet, that goes through all the ins and outs of that. And if you do that inside of a solo 401k, there's a little provision in there that came about during the 1980s when there were all the savings and loans went out of business and the government wanted private pension plans to pick up the real estate that was on their books. So they gave the pension plans an incentive by saying they wouldn't tax them on the leverage portion. So that carries over to solo 401k. So if you buy real estate with leverage inside of a solo 401k, you're exempt from the unrelated business income tax.
I didn't know that.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So now if I borrow money in, let's say, a Roth, and mm-hmm. I pay it off and then sell the property a year after that, then that's also not a taxable event?
Well, they use the average indebtedness on of the last year, over the last year, the last 12 months, as the means to the calculation. And you'd only be calculated on the gain associated with it. So,
But let's say I had a loan, I paid off the loan and sold it
year
later.
Yeah, then there's no tax.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can use a loan and
sure.
make a
once
plan.
Sure, once the loan is gone. Yeah, once the loan is gone, then there's no leverage at the time.
Okay.
That you sell the property.
Okay. We also see a lot of lending being done from self-directed accounts. So is there, what are the rules there? Position of trustees, loan to value? Is that all up to the...
Well, that's up to the individual, or generally speaking, people do that through brokers, and the brokers have their own guidelines, and there's issues of... what's the term? I forgot now. Usury that you have to be aware of that varies by state.
Correct.
As to the rates that you can charge. And so from the lender's standpoint, which in this case with the IRAs, you can't charge, extraordinary amounts. However, there's some restrictions on that or limitations on that. It's mostly to individuals. So if you're doing it to a company, the usury generally doesn't apply. So if you're lending to a company, it would be different. But some of the states like California, for example, the mortgage brokers in this state are regulated by the state of California. So they have their own rules and. Those brokers know the rules, and therefore, when they put people into deals, then they're going to meet those. They're going to satisfy the regulators.
Okay. About a minute and a half left. At one point, the Roth was a new product, kind of a hybrid of an IRA. So, are there any new products that are coming down the pike for the self-directed? Investor.
Well, only this product that's being piloted now by and promoted by Mark Erie out of Treasury and Obama, and that is the sort of they call it the automatic IRA. It's had a number of terms over the years, but it's now called the automatic IRA.
Okay.
And again, it's ironic they're trying to put more people in IRAs at the same time they're talking about potentially capping them and, coming down on the amounts you contribute to them, whatever, but they want more people to have them. So, I mean, they've got sort of a bipolar attitude on them. But in any case, that's the only new thing at this point, and it's being piloted. It hasn't been officially approved by Congress, but it's almost got a life of its own. But, I don't see anything wrong, and I don't see anybody opposed to it, so I think it'll probably get approved.
Okay. Well, Tom, thanks so much for taking time to join us. What is the website for RITA?
It's RITA, which is Retirement Industry Trust Association, U.S. for United States.org.
Okay. Thanks
again.
There's
information there about our upcoming event. You can register there. And there's a lot of other information that we have out there. So by all means, if there are investors on the phone or potential investors, by all means, check out our education material and give us a call if you have any questions.
Okay. Tom, thanks again. Really appreciate
it. Thank you.
All right.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.